Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefery, and this is episode number 208. Really appreciate you guys listening each week. I want to thank all those of you that leave ratings and reviews. That helps me spread the word and help as many coaches as I possibly can. Also appreciate the sponsors for bringing the show to you every week for free of charge. I want to specifically recognize Woodway for sponsoring this episode. Just thank the world of them and their products. I encourage you to reach out to them if you're in the market for treadmills. Check them out. Something that I've put in multiple weight rooms and just believe in. I only partner with products that I believe in, and Woodway is definitely one of those. This week I'm joined by a good friend, Brian Jordan. Brian and I go back probably almost 15 years, maybe even more than that. I started in the baseball world, as most of you know. Brian was the head strength coach for the Colorado Rockies for many, many years. He's now the technical manager for NSF International. And just been one of those guys that, regardless, I mean, we see each other occasionally from time to time, but it seems like we've known each other for a long time and just good friends. And I always talk about how as strength coaches, if we all lived on the same block, we'd freaking barbecue every night, you know. And that's really how I feel about Brian. But appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Hey, I love it. Thanks. Appreciate the offer.
Brian, tell everybody kind of, you know, what was the origin story for you. Why did you go into strength and conditioning in the first place?
So, as most of us were, you know, collegiate or athletes or former athletes, I had the opportunity to play baseball at Springfield College, and I knew that, you know, there'd come a time when that would come to an end, and I really had a passion to you know, be an athlete, but also to want to continue that, to give back to athletes and be part of that community for longer. And so got advice as to how to get into strength conditioning, and got some opportunities to finish up school in applied exercise science. So got to study in the field, and then also get an opportunity to finish my schooling at the Naval Academy, getting hands-on strength conditioning experience, which really opened the doors thereafter.
You've been, you know, Colorado Rockies, NSF, you mentioned Navy, you've been with the Tigers and UMass and some other different programs. Which one of those experiences best defined you as a coach?
Right. Well, I think probably with the Colorado Rockies. I mean, I spent 15 years with the Rockies. I went from, minor league coordinator, where I was overseeing the strength coaches and the programs throughout the minor leagues for the organization, to, you know, finally my, you know, opportunity in the big leagues. I spent 6 years there. So, and fortunately during that time, I also had a very good mentor in Brad Andrus during that time. And his insight, his personality, his experience, he came from the University of Michigan and played at Penn State, football at Penn State, in a baseball environment. He was a guy that, I can't speak enough about, that really taught me, professionally how to carry myself and what was important, and then also from a coaching aspect, how to respect what you do, respect the people that you work with, grow and learn, and be a leader. And he was a tremendous mentor. So I would say that experience really helped define my professional and personal growth.
Yeah, I think, so many times as coaches, it's South Florida for me, being there for 10 years and you're just kind of growing with a program is always, what I point to, because it wasn't just the taking over as the head guy or being the big league guy. It was learning how to run and develop a culture within the organization. And I mean, that's usually where that growth occurs for sure. Whenever you're doing that, though, you make lots of mistakes. What was one of the biggest mistakes you ever made, and kind of how you learned from it?
I don't know if there's one specific mistake that I made, but I think as a young strength coach, a lot of times, I was always trying to correct something really quick, wanting to hunt guys down to get them to work out and do those sort of things, instead of sitting back and allowing things to develop, and then at the right time learn how to come in, you know, as a coach and as a mentor, as a leader, to have a conversation with a young athlete about really what's going on, and really dive into the thought process and the mentality that went into that decision, as opposed to reacting to it.
Right.
So being able to step back, understand it, see it from a little wider angle, I guess, and then find a way to correct it, you know, hopefully long term, not just hunt people down. And yeah. You know, sometimes I had to do that. We all had to do that. You had to hunt people down and hold them accountable to a standard and a structure. But patience, I guess, was something that I learned through that experience, and the mistakes of going in and saying, hey, you know, you need to work out now, and it's, you know, the confrontations that you butt heads at that right. time, that looking back, you go, I probably could have handled that a little differently. And you learn that over time, I guess, the more mistakes that you make and the hopefully more that you learn from it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I talk about it all the time, that there's a difference between being passionate and being emotional, you know, and oftentimes we confuse those as a young coach, where we give an emotional response to trying to show our passion and how much we care about them or care about the organizational structure or whatever. But that's something that you learn with age, and you learn with experience, that you have to, you know, meet them where they're at. You have to find those opportunities to coach them up. It doesn't mean that you have to hold them any less accountable.
Right.
But you just take the emotion part of it out.
Right.
And I think that's important. You know, your new role with NSF, it's not new, I guess, per se, but, you know, that had to come from just a frustration of, you know, being a strength coach and the supplement industry and everything that goes into that. Talk a little bit about what the NSF does and what your role is with them.
Right. So I have an opportunity to go into, you know, a public health and safety organization, which NSF is. And, you know, obviously a lot of crossover over the years with dietary supplements. You know, you have to educate athletes and really help them navigate through that. NSF is a great opportunity for me to in the industry. I mean, we serve a service of testing and verifying dietary supplements to actually have what the label claims in it, and then also to be free of banned substances. So, you know, our NSF certified for sport program tests for 270 plus banned substances that are on the WADA code, on the NFL prohibited list, the Major League Baseball prohibited list. And so, once again, it's a unique opportunity for me to try to give back to athletes, to help protect athletes and serve athletes and consumers in general. Because there's a lot of bad information out there. There's a lot of just information out there that people just don't know how supplement companies and some of these products pose a health risk, but also pose drug failures, which we saw in recent years and continue to see over 20 years of cases where athletes are getting popped for taking dietary supplements because of the testing that is occurring now and what's in some of these products.
Mm. So when a product is NSF certified, is it just that they've taken a sampling at some point and tested it, make sure that it's what it says is in it, or is it the manufacturing process is being certified?
It's all that. So really it starts from the manufacturing process. So all the certifications that we have in our organization really start with GMP. So the good manufacturing practices, how a manufacturing facility, you know, manufactures a product is most important, because that's usually where there's contamination, that's usually where things go wrong, or those are issues that pop up. So if you clean up the facility first, the manufacturing facility, then you have a chance for a finished product that is not adulterated,
right,
either with banned substances or just doesn't have what it's supposed to have in it. The next step is, yes, they send in their samples and their products and labels of their product to be analyzed by our toxicologists, and then our lab actually tests the products for, you know, the ingredients. So it makes sure that, you know, sure that you're actually having the amount of protein in it that is claimed, and it's also being screened for heavy metals, pesticides, a lot of obviously health-related risks. And then, you know, the last part of that is the banned substances. And then once that is that process is all good and verified, then the company gets to the approval to use the mark on their products, and also list on the website the lots and the products that have been tested and are certified.
So now, is this an ongoing process? Is it something that they'll continually get checked?
Yeah, so it's there's two physical audits. There's audits every 6 months, so that you're making sure that it's not just, you know, show up the facility, they make all the corrections, and then you're out of there and they just go back to business as usual. And then, you know, anytime they change their formulations and labels, they've got to send it in. And then also there's a annual, or anytime they take a, they test a certain batch, you know, every time they have a batch tested, they have to send in a sample. So it's an ongoing process that you're continually verifying products for safety.
How much of a investment is it on the company's part to get their product tested?
Yeah, it's quite an investment. It's you know, I won't give the specific details of, because it changes so much. There's you know, a heavy cost would be, you know, at the GMP level. If, you know, some of the facilities need registered the GMP, that's a heavy cost because there's audits and corrections that go along with that. But if a, say a private label company wants to certify products in their manufacturing facility, which is a lot of them now that are certified and registered with NSF, then they can, you know, it's a cheaper cost on them. They just have to, you know, pay the cost of testing of certain number of lots.
Right.
You know, there's big companies from, you know, Cytosport to small companies that are, you know, Right Stuff and companies like that that, you know, produce different lot sizes and things like that, but they all go through the same process.
Right.
But there's different costs that are associated with how much they want to certify.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if this is true anymore, but I think at one point I had read that, you know, it's basically a $500 fine to the company if they get, you know, if somebody goes through the process of testing the product and it's not what they say it's in it, it's from the government, it's a $500 fine. And so what you have a lot of times is this buyer beware market where, you know, people are willing to take the risk because the accountability isn't that much,
right.
You know, and so... Taking my point in asking the investment question was, it takes a certain amount of commitment to purity and standards and trying to do it the right way to go and get, you know, NSF or WADA or Informed Choice or something along those lines, you know, out there. What do strength coaches not know about that process that they need to know? What's something that, you know, it's still commonly, the information's not there yet?
Well, I would dare say the information that people really don't know is what's really being found in products. So our research scientists will order products and test them. They'll look at them and see what's in it. And they're finding, obviously, a big thing right now is SARMs with the Asterion and some of these designer selective antigen modulators. There's anabolic steroids, there's amphetamines, there's stimulants. And all synthetic being put into these products to make them work better, right? But it has a tremendous health impact on people that they don't even know. And, you know, looking back, I really wish that I had this information when I was, you know, heavy into my strength conditioning career, because how many times did I have an athlete that wasn't recovering properly that may have been, you know, a supplement that he'd been taking may have been contributing to that when they weren't taking certified products. And, you know, you start looking at, you know, what, you know, guys that didn't, had a lot of injuries and think what could be the impact of that.
Right.
You know? And so start looking back on that going, well, what if I had the information to say, hey, you know, there's some serious, you know, dangers with taking dietary supplements that are not certified and verified.
Right.
And so.
Well, you got the one extreme where you're going to have the people that want to take every supplement under the sun, and there's probably a good chance that they're not always going to be the purest or the, you know, or certified or whatever. But then you also got the other extreme where coaches are like, you know, there's just too much ambiguity to where I'm not going to do anything.
Right.
I mean, what, you know, being a former, you know, being a strength coach,
yeah.
where do you lie on that spectrum?
Well, I truly believe that dietary supplements have a place and a need. You know, I've always been a food first guy. I believe that, you know, but it's unrealistic. Anyone that's been in any time in the sports world, especially as a strength conditioning coach, you know that travel, demands of the game, the intensity, the kind of things that represent, you know, high level sports, that it's unrealistic to achieve what you need through food only.
Right.
And so supplementation does have important position. It's just a matter of, I think too often, you know, athletes go on the far end of the spectrum of, well, more is better. We know that, right? Everything that they do is at times, and all of us to some degree is, you know, you push that envelope saying more is better. If this is good, I got to do more. So, you know, they take a lot of supplements and not really know why. I think the industry is starting to get away from that, and that, you know, education through strength coaches and dietitians are getting out there saying, hey, you know, it's not just food for and food only. You know, if you are going to do dietary supplements, just look at what really you have going on, where you'd be deficient, whether it be vitamin D, whether it be, you know, omega fish, you know, fish oil, things like that, that really can have an impact on inflammation and health, and you're just not getting it through your diet.
Yeah.
And what truly is supplementation? An analysis of your diet saying, well, I don't get enough of this. How can I get more of this to help my overall health and performance? And looking at it, you know, like that, as opposed to what can I take enough of where hopefully something works.
Right.
And we kind of have to get away from that buckshot mentality and approach that, you know, let's be more specific to the needs of the athlete, and I think it'll do them better justice in the long run.
You know, there's so many different, I mean, you mentioned all the private label and all the different products that just pop up almost daily, you know, almost hourly, you know. How best can strength coaches stay on top of it? I mean, what resources, what are the different ways to go and make sure that an athlete walks in with a supplement that you've never heard of? What should you do?
Well, I think the easiest thing, because there are many things that go on with this that you can't, like looking at a label. Like there's ingredients on there. For the most part, you know, as people become more educated, there's always changes, makes it very difficult. So, and a lot of times these companies will not list everything that's in the product, you know, that's on the label. So it's the easiest thing is to make sure the products are third-party certified. Hands down, because at least it's had a process that's been analyzed. The products have been looked at and not just been approved by, you know, just been put out there. Because the FDA doesn't pre-approve products. They don't test for, you know, safety and efficacy. You know, anyone can put a product out there, and the FDA will regulate post-market. So you can create a product, put it out there. So it's very difficult to stay up with so many different changes in product. You know, the older the company is, and if they're entering into third-party certified, you know, programs, then they've got skin in the game. They want to do well, you know, mostly for the health of their product or the efficacy of their product and health of the athlete and consumer. So those little things, I think, go a long way in an industry which continues to grow. And, you know, there's a lot of risk that's associated with, you know, new companies that are willing to take more risk to make more money.
Yeah.
And the end result is consumers and athletes are the ones that, you know, pay for that, unfortunately.
What is the penalty for most? I mean, obviously, if it's a steroid, it's a year of suspension, you know, for in collegiate setting. But, you know, what are the different penalties that exist?
For athletes? Yeah, so, I mean, Major League Baseball, you know, if someone fails a drug test, they're out 100 games, first pop. I think NFL, you know, I think it's four games, you know, for performance enhancing and suspension. There's some serious financial, payback for, you know, those kind of
pay you typically.
Yeah, they don't get paid and they lose games, and so there's some real high risk college, and also there's a status. I mean, you're blackballed to some degree in that, you know, if another, you know, suspension or thing like that will cost even, you know, double that in most cases, you know, the suspension. You know, there's some, and then obviously, you know, the perception of being a cheater and things like that, that is very hard to get back. Even if someone took a supplement and it was inadvertent doping, they're still held accountable to that because it's strict liability.
Right.
But, you know, it's a hard uphill battle to get back maybe your image or, you know, things that, you know, reputation that you just made a very, you know, callous mistake.
Right.
And, you know, some guys just never make it back from that reputation because they're always going to be labeled as a cheater when maybe they just were negligent.
Right.
Right. And so as gatekeepers, as strength coaches, dietitians, you know, everyone has a role to help educate and, you know, protect the athlete from themselves at times, right? We protect them from, you know, stupid human tricks and everything else.
You know, when you're looking for an edge, you're willing to kind of go to whatever levels, and sometimes you know, when the GNC kid behind the counter says, "Yeah, this is great. Yeah, it's compliant.
Yeah,
you know, that's all they need. You know,
yeah.
I think that's my point. My point is that the penalty for the athlete is severely skewed towards them, as opposed to these companies that are making millions of dollars off of off of the risk.
Yeah,
you know, a reward standpoint. So, with the different solutions out there, I mean, you mentioned the different deals. When we talk about looking for the NSF label, do we go to a website? Do we go to, you know, how do we find out if something's NSF certified?
So we have our website, which is nsfsport.com, and that has the listing of all the certified products. It's 726 right now products that are certified. So there's a lot of choices in a lot of different categories. And it also lists the lot numbers, right? So for the most part, when a product is, they have, you know, specific lots that are tested, those lots are listed on there as well, so that you know that, because there's still products, some products that are sent out there in the general population that they don't certify and test because they assume that the general consumer doesn't care to be, that what's in it's, you know, important, is important. So the app, the NSF Sport app, is a very good resource that also lists, you know, the products that are certified, the companies, the address of the companies, the contact information. All that information's on the app, and you can also sort through type of products, type of ingredients, things like that that are useful.
Is that a paid resource or
no? It's free. Pre-resource, and that's part of the fees that the client pays. You know, the companies pay when they get certified. You know, they have the opportunity to be out there and listed to the general consumer. But you know, obviously, that's part of the fee of having a website and an app.
Yeah,
you have to charge on to the consumer. It gets charged into, you know, the fees of client providing a service.
Sure. Well, man, we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
The best piece of coaching advice, I think it goes back to, I mentioned before, a mentor of mine telling me, to be able to step back when you go into a new setting. You know, one of my first days as a young intern was to, hey, forget about what you're bringing into this. You have knowledge, and everybody, you know, there's value for everybody and what their knowledge is, but when you come into this setting, which was a professional setting, that just observe. Understand what you're coming into instead of bringing in preconceived notions of this is how it should be, right? You're able to sit back and see what it really is and then see how you can truly help and provide a great service to the athletes, to the organization, instead of rushing in as young strength coaches we may do
with all
and
the
go,
answers.
I'm going to fix this, I'm going to fix all that, I'm going to do this, and then you end up, you know, making mistakes that maybe you didn't have to make if you just kind of step back for a second, allow the environment to reveal itself, and see how best you can serve in a servant mentality as opposed to I'm going to take over the world.
Yeah, sure. Give us a book, app, website recommendation. I think you already gave an app, but give us a book and a website.
Talent Code, I think, was one of the best books, and no offense to your book, it was a very good book. But Talent Code, for me professionally, was a really good book that, you know, things that we thought about that you maybe crossed your mind really started to I think align with, you know, what's really going on, you know, physiologically and genetically, and how all that plays out is, for me, was just a really eye-opening book where you go, okay, you know, we can really start looking at this because it really does make a lot of sense with all we've seen through experience firsthand. So I thought that was a good book.
Website?
I mean, our website, NSF Certified for Sport, is a good resource. But I would say it depends on what you're looking for. That's a tough, for me, you know, strength conditioning-wise, I think the NSCA is the journals and the peer-reviewed articles and things like that is a great resource for a young coach. And you know, you got to look for this day and age, really good resources of people that you trust that are having people look at, you know, what they're doing. There's so much out there that I think the NSCA does a very good job with, you know, trying to have members provide practical content, and then also the research side of it from strength and conditioning.
Great. Well, buddy, we you know, as a strength coach, you know, one strength coach to another, I'm very appreciative of guys like yourself that are in these organizations where we need a voice. You know, I mean, it's one thing to have an organization that's doing right by coaches, by athletes, by parents, all those things, but they don't always see it through the lens of a coach sometimes, you know. And so having a guy like yourself there that's been in the trenches, that's able to give that perspective, that helps shape an organization that's doing right by a lot of people. So appreciate you coming on the show. Appreciate you sharing with everybody. Thanks for being a buddy, man.
Good back.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.